ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Parito Vatsaper Vatsams Charanyan No Charayan Vyavaharad Vibhu Yamuno Pavane Kunjad Dvija Shankulitangripe Parito vatsaper vatsams Charanyan vyaharad vibhu Yamuno pavane kunjad Dvija shankulitang gripe Parito vatsaper vatsams Charayan vyaharad vibhu Yamuno bhavane kunjad Dvija shankulitam gripe Parito vatsaper vatsams Charayan vyaharad vibhu Yamuno pavane kujad Dvija shankulita gripe Parita Surrounded by Vatsapai Cowherd boys Vatsan Calves Charayan Herding, tending. Vyaharat, enjoyed by traveling. Vibhu, the Almighty. Yamuna, the Yamuna River. Upavane, gardens on the shore. Kujat, vibrated by the voice. Dvija, the twice-born birds. Sankulita, densely situated. Angripe, in the trees. Translation. In his childhood, the Almighty Lord was surrounded by cowherd boys and calves, and thus he traveled on the shore of the Jamuna River, through gardens densely covered with trees and filled with vibrations of chirping birds. Purport. Nanda Maharaj was a landholder for King Kamsa, but because by caste he was a Vaishya, a member of the mercantile and agricultural community, he maintained thousands of cows. It is the duty of the Vaishyas to give protection to the cows, just as the Kshatriyas are to give protection to the human beings. Because the Lord was a child, he was put in charge of the calves with his cowherd boy friends. These cowherd boys were great rishis and yogis in their previous births. And after many such pious births, they gained the association of the Lord and could play with him on equal terms. Such cowherd boys never cared to know who Krishna was, but they played with him as a most intimate and lovable friend. They were so fond of the Lord that at night they would only think of the next morning when they would be able to meet the Lord and go together to the forest for cowherding. The forests on the shore of the Jamuna are all beautiful gardens full of trees of mango, jackfruit, apples, guava, oranges, grapes, berries, palm fruit, and so many other plants and fragrant flowers. And because the forest was on the bank of the Jamuna, naturally, there were ducks, cranes, and peacocks on the branches of the trees. All these trees and birds and beasts were pious living entities born in the transcendental abode of Vrindavan just to give pleasure to the Lord and his eternal associates, the cowherd boys. While playing like a small child with his associates, the Lord killed many demons, including Agasura, Bakasura, Pralambasura, and Gardabasura. Gardaba, donkey, right? So that's Danakasura, yeah. Although he appeared at Vrindavan just as a boy, he was actually like the covered flames of a fire. As a small particle of fire can kindle a great fire with fuel, so the Lord killed all these great demons, beginning from his babyhood in the house of Nanda Maharaj. The land of Vrindavan, the Lord's childhood playground, still remains today, and anyone who visits these places enjoys the same transcendental bliss, although the Lord is not physically visible to our imperfect eyes. Lord Chaitanya recommended this land of the Lord as identical with the Lord and therefore worshipable by the devotees. This instruction is taken up especially by the followers of Lord Chaitanya, known as the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And because the land is identical with the Lord, devotees like Uddhava and Vidura visited these places 5,000 years ago in order to have direct contact with the Lord, visible or not visible. Thousands of devotees of the Lord are still wandering in these sacred places of Vrindavan, and all of them are preparing themselves to go back home, back to Godhead. So, here we see the point about the Lord being with the devotees. And then we have that the demons are not so with the Lord. But the principle is here, as we see, in qualification. What is the qualification for doing a particular activity? So we hear the qualification of Nanda Baba as a Vaishya. We hear about the Kshatriyas. We hear about the wonderfulness of the gardens, how they add to these pastimes. We hear how the place is non-different from the Lord, how the demons are not qualified in their own right to know the Lord, but they're still benefited. So we see here a common theme is the qualification that is gained, of what result is gained from what qualification. So one is trying to establish that by one's activities, one establishes where one goes or where one situates oneself in the cosmic creation. So of all places, then naturally being with the Lord is the best. So many other places can be gained. But since the Lord is the best, then those places are due to less qualification. Right? Means if you're going to associate with somebody, there must be some common quality. Right? Like you see very powerful persons or very rich or very famous people, they associate with each other. Because the commonality of being on the top of the opulences. Someone is the top of beauty, someone of fame, someone of power, someone of strength. So it's common. Otherwise, why is the politician moving with the model, with the actor, with the business magnate? Right? Because there's a common qualification of having opulence. Right? So if one wants to move with the Lord and his devotees, then there has to be that common quality. The Lord has expanded himself for rasa. And therefore, the common point between him and the devotees is rasa. Right? If the interest is not there, the Lord has expanded himself to please himself, increase his pleasure by rasa. So that means then to qualification would be the desire to please him through rasa. Otherwise, what's the common point? He's unlimited, we're not. He's got all opulences, we don't. Right? So where's the common element? Right? Because friendship means something in common. Right? This is the point. Drupad makes this point to Dronacharya when he comes to beg from him for some wealth, saying that we're old friends from the school. So his point was, in the school, yes, we had something in common, because we were both students in the school, but now you're an extremely poor person, I'm extremely powerful and rich person, what do we have in common? Right? So how can we be friends? Right? Foolish. You know, a foolish statement, but from that perspective, you could say, yes, what is in common? He didn't understand the power and wealth of the Brahmins, so therefore he could not see the commonality. But it would have actually done him well to have seen that. Didn't do him good to not see it. So then that pleasure of the Lord is the common point. So then we see here is that the cowherd boys, they're just interested in pleasing Krishna. They're not interested in something else. They couldn't care less if he's God or not, right? That's not the common quality, right? In Vaikuntha, Krishna's God, and his godness is appreciated. A common point. So then there's rasa. Cowherd boys couldn't care less. They just wanted to associate with him and interact with him. They thought he was a nice person. They liked him. So they're interacting. The trees, the birds, the Jamuna, the gardens, same purpose, just to please Krishna. Therefore, they're all there together. And because of this non-difference, then they're considered non-different from the Lord. So by that association of the devotees, of the holy Dham, then there's a common element. Does this make some sense? Right? So we're looking for commonality. That's what gets you into this spiritual world. One purifies oneself, yes, but that purity gets you out of the material world. It doesn't get you into the spiritual world. Right? Of course, those in the spiritual world are pure. Right? But so is Brahman. It's also pure. Right? So the demons killed by Krishna, they go to the Brahman. So there is something in common there, but not enough for rasa. Right? They're interested in their own personal pleasure. And so then they approach the Lord. So Krishna, in his state of Atmarama, is absorbed in his own pleasure. And in that state, there is no manifestation. So then, being in the Brahman, that is for those who are Atmarama. Does that make sense? So the demons being only interested in their own pleasure, that means you're not actually interested in rasa. Right? Actual impersonalism is only being interested in yourself. That's real impersonalism. Of course, you can only be interested in yourself if you're a person. Right? So that point does remain. So even the impersonalist is still a person because he's an individual wanting to be happy. Otherwise, if it was all one, he'd already be happy. He wouldn't have to worry about it. Right? So you can't get away from being a person. But just for discussion, to make the distinction between, then the demons obtain that state because they're only interested in themselves, so therefore they obtain that state in which you're just absorbed in yourself. You sit in the Brahman, aham brahmasmi. So even there, the commonality is gained. Right? Does that make sense? So and then in the material world, then you are finding some commonality on the, how you say, by the interaction of the elements. You have a particular conditioned nature. That conditioned nature will be interested or attracted to the similar thing in the material nature. Does that make sense? Means because you have eyes that can distinguish colors, therefore you like looking at them. If you didn't have eyes, right, worms don't sit around and talk to each other, wow, great sunset. You know, Does that make sense? Right? They don't, because there's no interest. You know, they may talk about, you know, ooh, nice gooky mud, yeah, you know. No sand, really smooth. You know, like that they might interact. Does that make sense? So what is common to you, that is what you interact on. So when the consciousness is mundane, therefore we interact with the material energy, which is also Krishna. Right? So we never get away from Krishna. So now the point is what is the common element? Where do we start? So we see here in the opening, then Nanda Baba and the residents of Mathura, then they take up the commonality of the Lord in that what are the activities, the natural activities of the different parts of the Lord that they take up. Right? Instead of just doing what they like, they do what Krishna likes, right? So as described before, the common point between Krishna's associates is that they want to please him. Right? There's no other purpose. So therefore, in the conditioned state, if the common point is how Krishna is pleased, right? Krishna as the universal form, Krishna as the Virat Rupa, as Garbhodakshay Vishnu, then as the Purusha, he is pleased that his head has a particular function. His arms have another function, his stomach another function, his feet another function, though we know he can do anything with any part of his body. But still, he likes to eat with his mouth, right? Protect with his hands, right? Prosperities from his stomach. He moves, excuse me. He moves about on his feet, right? Except for when he's with the cowherd boys, you don't hear of Krishna walking around on his hands, right? Does that make sense? Oh, well, excuse me, when he's really small and he crawls around, and when he's with Mother Yashoda and all that, but does that make some sense? So that's how he likes. So then the common point is, okay, then since I'm in the material world, I'm dealing with the conditioned nature, and Krishna in this material form does these things, so then I can bring my activities in line with that, and then I have a common point with the Lord. I'm actually indirectly in the Lord's pastimes. Material pastimes, but pastimes nonetheless. And I'm conscious of the Lord in these pastimes. Then in this state, because you're thinking of the Lord, then it gives entrance into the eternal pastimes. Right? And because one is engaging oneself in connection with the Lord, one is liberated. Right? As previously described, the demons are liberated because they're in touch with the Lord, but basically indirectly. They don't know him as God. They don't know him like this. So they're interacting with God. But that indirect interaction gives them liberation. Does that make sense? So here, the Varnashram system, then the indirect aspect that it's dealing with God through the material energy, but according to his rules, gives you liberation. And that you're doing it to please the Lord, that's devotion. Does that make sense? That's devotion. So that gets you into the spiritual world. Right? Therefore Krishna says in the Gita, perform your duties, right, with detachment. That gets you out of the material world. Thinking of me, that brings you to the spiritual world. To please me, that gets you into the spiritual world. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So here then, as a detail, then Nanda Maharaj is a landowner. Landowners are Vaishyas. The land is owned by the kings. But they give it to the Vaishyas to take care of. Does that make sense? So, landowner, it's not his, but it's as good as his. And it will be there in the family as long as they perform their duties properly. So it looks like he had you know, his guards, military. We hear from Kavi Karnapur that when the cowherd men headed by Nanda Baba, they decided to move to Vrindavan. Then when they stayed in Chatigarh, then all the guards were set up. There were like five circles. So there was one group that had bows and arrows and all that. Then another group with sticks, and like this until eventually then Krishna and the ladies were in the middle. So he has his military, right? He's getting tax from the other Vaishyas that are there. He'll take care of the petty problems between the various members of the community. So in one sense, he's like a king. Therefore, it's Maharaj Nanda. But his Maharajness is still as a Vaishya. Does that make sense? Fine point, but important point, especially if one's dealing with Varnashram, to understand the difference between a Vaishya acting as a king and a Kshatriya acting as one. Like that, because there is a difference. Right? As a Vaishya, their business is to make profit. So their protection is a tool to get profit. The Kshatriya's duty is protection. So therefore, profit is a tool for them to get to give protection. See the difference? Right? Okay, so now in the same line, it's not that these pastimes of Varnashram are just something of this world, just to give trouble to people here to make it, you know, harder for them to live. Right? Krishna gets a laugh out of making so much problem. No, this is what he does. Right? So as a cow since his father is a Vaishya, then as young Vaishyas, then they attend to the calves. Right? The adults take care of the cows, the children take care of the calves. So then taking care of the calves, then everything becomes nice. Right? They get trained, they do the same thing, they learn the mentality, and they have fun. Calves are young, they have that mentality, they're not mature. So then the children associating with them, it's a similar mentality, so they'll get along very well. And so then they all spend their time in the these cowherd pastures, and then in this way they associate. So we see that then in that case, then even more there's significance to this Varnashram system, since it's a reflection of how Krishna lives in the spiritual world. Right? But there it's manifest due to the natural affection of the devotees than the variety of ways they want to serve him. While here it has to be formalized into rules just to keep people on track, so at least indirectly they're associating with the Lord. And ideally, then there'll be devotees and then make that direct connection also. Does this make sense? So it's not something foreign, right? The nature of the living entity is it does something in connection with someone it likes, right? That's the feminine mentality. You do something because you like somebody, right? Or you do something because it gives you profit, and that profit then can be used to advantage in relationships. But in any case, a relationship is there. Otherwise, there's no activity. Does that make sense? So then, this whole culture becomes interesting to the living entity in its pure state, of course, because it's connected to him. This is what Krishna does. Krishna acts as a Vaishya, or he acts as a Kshatriya, or he acts as a Brahmin, right? Or in past times he even acts as a Shudra. But in any case, he acts within this system. This is his social system. This is what he likes to do. So we like Krishna, and Krishna does these things. We like to do these things, right? Does that make sense? So then it takes on an inspiring aspect rather than some dry rules and regulations, because rules in that are samanda, so that means it's intelligence, means it doesn't, resonate with the mind. Does that make sense? I perform the rules, I get a result. That I'm interested in, okay. But as far as taste, not so much, because the intelligence aspect is more prominent. Does that make sense? It's a fact. It's a figure. Right? There's this rule. But attraction to that rule brings the mind in. Thinking has started. It's in the realm of the intelligence, so you're contemplating the various options. But still, mind is involved. Right? And once the mind is involved for some time, then that attachment develops. Then the mind is fully involved. Being fully involved, activity takes place. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah? So then, if we find that the rules and regulations of varnashram, of sadhana bhakti, aren't really attractive, right? We're not inspired to follow them because of taste, ruchi. That's because it's still very intellectual, which is fine. But we should just see that that intellectual aspect is not being blocked by not actually seeing the connection to Krishna. Because once you see its connection to Krishna, its relationship to Krishna, then it becomes something interesting, something attractive. As soon as it's attractive, then the mind becomes involved and then wants to be connected. Does that make some sense? Right? So then here we see is that this is what the Lord does. When He's in the spiritual world, He follows it. Varnashram and relationships with others. When He's here, it's varnashram, relationships with others. In fact, the varnashram is only there for relationships with others. It doesn't have another purpose. Right? So we can understand that another definition of varnashram would be the science, or the, the science of the environment for, the science of suitable environment for interaction. Does that make sense? What is the proper environment in which I can have a proper relationship, a complete relationship, a full relationship, not a partial relationship, right? Partial relationships aren't satisfying, right? Partial relationship, at least, okay, then there is the possibility, the prospect that I could get something full out of it, but I may not be. But there's the prospect, so there's hope. Right? And as long as there's hope, the relationship is maintained. When the hope is lost, relationship stops. But what we're looking for is that full interaction. So the varnashram system, these systems of sadhana that are there, are how to create an environment in which the full relationships that one is looking for can be tasted. And using your intelligence, understanding that of all relationships, the one with Krishna and the one with Krishna in relationships to the devotees are the most important. And then supporting that are then the activities of this material world in relationship to the devotees to serve Krishna is then right behind that. Does that make some sense? Yeah? Yeah. So we see throughout is then, depending upon what is that relationship and how you're viewing it, that gets you your result in this world. So it's very personal. Hopefully not scary. Right? Scary in that it's still us as a person having to make a commitment as a person to a person.
or even more persons. Right? Does that make some sense? Otherwise, it's a nice process, you know, you put your corn, you go up to the horn and hard art machine, put your coin in, you know, pull the, what do you call it, little door, the appropriate door, and get what you want. Right? Works nice. But as the advertisement goes, you can't eat atmosphere, right? So that's the point. There is no atmosphere in this. But rasa happens in atmosphere. Does that make sense? So there is a person there. A person is cooking. A person is serving. A person is eating. A person is cleaning. Right? And the more that they're interacting, the more full the experience. Does that make sense? So we have to be careful that spiritual life doesn't get put into this nice little box that I just put in, you know, some Hare Krishna four rounds at this side, and out this side pops pure love of God. Right? That's, as an overall concept, very good. But the point is between something going in and something coming out means that in and that out have a relationship. Does that make sense? The elements going into the box and the result coming out of the box means there had to have been an interaction between the two of them. They had to touch at some point. The box isn't empty. Right? So does that make sense? So that means then the process is personal. So as we understand that, then the process comes alive. And then everything about the process becomes relationships and becomes something nice. Right? Then all the dry, boring parts disappear, because there isn't such a thing as a dry, boring part, because it doesn't exist in the cosmic creation. It only exists in our mind. We think there's dry, boring parts, but there isn't such a thing. It doesn't exist. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay, so then Prabhupada's pointing out in the end, and therefore there's thousands of devotees then wandering in these holy places, associating devotees, absorbed in the Lord's pastimes, His name, forms, qualities, and pastimes, so that they themselves can also attain to that position of having an eternal relationship with the Lord. Right? So that's the, how do you say, whole point being brought up, or let's say, yes, this point that's being brought out here of what Uddhava's speaking. Any questions or comments? Yes, sir. Okay. Boring is okay. Meaning you're saying is, if boredom is there, means we're not understanding how to act in the relationship, or what is the relationship? I didn't quite exactly. It's some kind of boredom. Yeah. Is that here something? It's making a point that we had discussed about boredom, and then he's putting together incomplete relationships, that one of the elements of incomplete relationships is there is an element of boredom there, generally on one side or the other. There may be anxiety on one side and boredom on the other. You know, they seem to sometimes go together. I guess maybe boredom is just anxiety with an attitude, you know? Kind of like you're just covering up, you know, let's blow this popcorn stand. It means you're actually bored, so, you know, but you have an attitude, so. Or there's an anxiety that nothing's happening in all this, and so I'm in the wrong place, I'll be seen by the wrong people, I mean by the right people in the wrong place, or, you know, stuff. Means the living entity can't relate to anything not personal, technically. It's not in their nature. If the living entity was simply sat, then existing would be enough for it. But boredom, we see, means not having anything to do, means activity. Because living entity is coming from the chit potency, which is where the action happens, right? Chit is knowledge and activity. Sat is eternality. So living entity exists, but it's not enough. In other words, intransitive verbs aren't what's inspiring. Right? Intransitive means it's not doing something. Right? Krishna is floating in the Jamuna. Okay, that's nice, but how long do you appreciate Krishna's floating in the Jamuna? Right? There has to be something about Krishna, what he's doing, who he's interacting with. Right? Then it becomes interesting. So then transitive verb becomes, involved, that something is going from one person to another. Intransitive means nothing is being going, moving. It's just existing. Does that make sense? So, therefore, the living entity gets bored in that only the environment is there, but there's no interaction going on in the environment. So potential is there, but the potential is not happening. So there's no attraction to the field, because if there's attraction, then there's some hope that something will happen. Because as soon as there's attraction, there's excitement. And excitement then means that there's hope in the prospect of getting some result. Right? Then one has to know how to interact to turn that excitement actually into rasa. Right? So if there is an excitement, there's boredom. Boredom means one, there's no attraction to the field. Does that make sense? So then, generally the tendency is change the field. I'm bored here in this room, so I won't just sit there and do. Or there's something else, I add some element to the field. I'm sitting there and I'm bored, so therefore then I add the computer to it, or some music to it, or some other game to it. Or if even adding all that into it, there's still boredom, I go to another room. Or if that's still boring, I leave the house, go somewhere else. Or I get bored here, I go to Puri. Or I get bored there, I go to another country. Or, you know, that's kind of the limit we're stuck with. But, you know, go to Antarctica. Or, you know what I'm saying? You go to just, you change the field. Because the field, attraction in the field means, that's what Prajumna means, attraction to the field. Shankarshan's the field. When you're attracted to it, then you do something, then there's no boredom. So that's what I'm saying. If you're only staying there with Shankarshan, that element, then existence, pure existence, doesn't inspire. There has to be the touch that there will be result, and therefore an activity that will get that result. Then there's some meaning. Right? Is that okay? Yeah. So Sankarshan has to expand into Prajumna, which is then focused on, connected to Aniruddha. When that happens, then the three being in place, because all of them have opulences, right? Two each. Then Vasudeva means all six of those opulences functioning at once. Does that make sense? Sankarshan is two opulences to function. Prajumna is two opulences, Aniruddha two opulences. But Vasudeva, for them to actually combine, then Vasudeva means all six. So that's why it's complete. So if a field is there, there's two opulences, nice. Or there's attraction, there's two. But basically those four which should be there. Then there's hope for that, but you haven't gained them yet. They have to interact. So if you're not getting, if all these elements aren't there, then the satisfaction is not there. So Varnashram and devotional service, all these elements of sadhana, where we're engaging in a regulated way the conditioned nature, tell you how to scientifically go through and make sure everything's in place, right? You know, you have the rule, okay, first you put down a plate, right? And then you put a cup, and then you see the salt and whatever it is, other condiments are there. There's something to drink is there. There's some food. Of the food, there should be some main element, something to go with it. Any other side dishes that go along with that. Okay, now depending upon the means what time of the day it is, or the season, the person that you're offering it to, or the situation that is there, you know, it's a festival or not festival, or ordinary day or special day, or therefore then you create a menu, then accordingly to who it is, then you're serving, and depending on what's there, you make sure the paraphernalia all matches. So you could say so many rules. Can't we just sit down and eat? You know, yeah, hey, I just go out, buy the little plastic box, stick it in the microwave, punch, you know, the button 2 minutes, because it generally gets hot enough in 2 minutes. But, you know, if I'm short of time, hey, I can just be warm, you know. And so then, so I punch that, I get out, I take the plastic container, because fortunately the microwave doesn't make the plastic hot. Then I get out my little plastic spoon or fork, you know, if it's noodles, of course, and then eat. But still there's some rules, because I will put it in the microwave, I will push the right buttons, I will use the fork if it's noodles and the spoon if it's soup. And this way eat. But just, even though I throw out the rules, I still follow them, but it's just a little less, because I don't see any relationship in any of these, because I'd rather be out, you know, walking the street, you know, trying to get into bed somewhere, because that's where I find some rasa. But other than that, relating to people and anything else, because then there's service, right? Because in bed, generally, my senses are taken care of. But anything else other than that, I gotta work. You know, I gotta cook, or I gotta serve, or I gotta clean, or I gotta do other things, and hey, it's not me. You know? So, therefore, that's why the rules are there. They have it. You go out on the street, and as soon as you get there, then the other ones check you out and go, hey, that was in last week, you know, and then they walk off. So there are rules, and they're very strict rules, and you don't get it right, you lose. And you got to have money, and you got to be out there spending it, and you got to be changing your outfit every few months. And the right words, and the right attitude, and the right, you know, movements. So, in other words, you got a choice. God's rules or your own rules, you know? You know, when God's, you know, in other words, it's God who says my way or the highway. In other words, you either follow His rules and then you're a upstanding member of the community, or you're on the highway, you're a street person. Very simple. So the rules are there simply to see that it's complete. Okay, I've served prashad, but I didn't give salt, and there's no salt there. How will the person be pleased? Right? Serve as many times as they want. Okay, standard is I serve once, right? Everybody gets, right? You know, everybody's happy, smiling at me. That gives a really good interaction. I go back immediately as soon as I get to the line, right? They haven't even necessarily started on what they ate. I ask them if they want again. They all say no. No interaction. So that's the end of rasa there. So now the next point is I make my own plate and sit down and eat. Because that gives some interaction. That gives some rasa. Right? But the people who are sitting and eating are kind of thinking, hey, I'd like some more. But there's no option because the servers have all sat down. Of course, if you don't know what culture is, then you stand up, walk over to the bucket yourself, get it yourself, or, you know, ask someone else to drag the bucket and they pass it down the line, push it down and that. And, you know, okay, it works. But it's much nicer if there's traditional interaction, because that's what it's for. You know? That's what it's for, is that there isn't, the mother has made the food. She would actually like people to be pleased with it and see that pleasure. And to see that they're getting the maximum out of it. So that means somebody's serving. Right? So then, why would one avoid these things? It's simply due to misinformation. that one does not know that whatever you're looking for, it's not on the street. What you're looking for is interacting with other human beings on a human platform. Because otherwise, sense gratification gets old really fast. You know? Because, yeah, it's just the nature of the senses. Right? So then, of course, if, you know, divorce is there and other things, you can spice it up a bit, you know, go through a few, third time's a charm, you know, they say, and all these things. So it's, you know, I guess the third time works because then it's, well, even though I'm old and wrinkled, this guy or lady married me, and so they must really like me, so, and I don't think when this one falls through, I'll get another one, so I might as well make this one work, right, you know? So, you know, I guess the prospect of security becomes more, you know, and one's faith in one's own wealth or beauty, getting facility or getting interaction kind of starts to wane, and one's just happy with anything that anybody will interact on. Does that make some sense? So boredom, yeah, is because we don't actually see what we can get from the field. Or it can be that, yes, due to our conditioned nature, there are elements there we don't relate to in the field. So that's not a problem. The point is make sure that you're always in a field that you can gain something from. And always be informing yourself so that you don't miss out on something in the field that you could get that you don't realize is actually there in your nature. Does that make sense? So maybe we don't see it due to a lack of training, but there's something there in that field you could gain. You know? Like we're in a garbage dump. Okay, not much for us, but the crows are having a great time. But then we can see, hey, this is just what the Shastra says. You know, we see here the crows are going after the garbage, right? We're not. And we see that when they're all sitting on the fence and the person comes and throws the garbage, if you look at it carefully, it's the young crows that jump down there. The old crows sit and watch. They're not going to go down until it's confirmed that there's garbage. And then, of course, due to the bird's excellent social structure of pecking order, right, then as soon as garbage is found by the young crows, then by pecking order, it's the right of the older crows first. So then all they have to do is fly down, and the young ones have to move. So many things we've gained from the garbage pile, you know, instead of just going, yuck, we could go, wow, the Shastra says this, and here it is happening in real life. So even there might be something from the field that we can appreciate. Of course, after that, then we might go, okay, time to move on, and, you know, we've gained what we can from this field, and then move on. Is that okay? Yes, sir. Bless her. Bhakti Karya. Varna Shankara, yeah. Yes. Mixed Varna, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. So or no varna.
So then the obvious question is, how can there be appropriate reciprocation between people, you know, when they're not really sure which varna they're in?
Uh-huh. Okay. So a very intelligent question here is that in the Kali Yuga, then basically we see is what's mentioned as Varna Shankara. And he mentions from third canto of the Bhakti Karya of the interaction between the Varnas and their natural reciprocal mood.
So then, but Varnashankara, being unwanted progeny, but technically the Sanskrit terminology means mixed, right? So mix is unwanted, right? So it's a, so how would that work? What we'll do is that we'll say it in a nutshell because it's kind of the end of the class, and then we'll end, and then after a few minutes we'll start again with question and answer, and then we'll carry on with this if anybody wants to hear a very detailed point. But basically is there's underlying sciences on each of the varnas and ashrams. So whatever you're using, it still follows that method. Like, let's say you're making a chutney. It's not a straight preparation. It's not a sweet. It's not a salty. It's not specifically pungent. Because generally pungent things are dry. Right? Like you hear, see in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says jhal. One of the preparations that's offered to Lord Chaitanya means it's a dry sabji that has a lot of extra pepper in it. Right? But the chutney's wet. Right? It's sweet, but it's also salty. It's salty, but it's also sweet. Right? It's kind of like got a full amount of sugar, full amount of salt, and full amount of chili. But how you deal with those three is still the same. So that's why it's so important to know the science rather than the rules. Right? This is generally where a misunderstanding can come up, is that by thinking that by having followed the rule itself, that that is the varna or the ashram. But technically there's principles on which those are based. Understanding that, if you follow that science, it can always work. It doesn't matter. In other words, let us say we have like this. This is practical. I've seen it myself. The mother is a full pujari at a temple. That's all she does. The father's a businessman. And their child then is a mix between, a pratiloma mix between a business mentality and a brahminical mentality. So it's inverse, so it'll be even a stronger difficulty than the other way, if it was analoma. So now the kid is very attractive and loves doing brahminical activities, will generally always dress in brahminical ways, absorb themselves in brahminical things, but at the same time they'll have a wanderlust and a very strong business side because they have to take care of that wanderlust by money. So they spend their time doing small business deals that gets them to travel around the world. Right? But what they're traveling around the world for is going to brahminical activities like Rath Yatras and other big festivals. So, therefore, as long as the business that they're performing is done according to the rules of business and their participation in those festivals is according to those rules, means they're going to the festival for spiritual benefit, to do service and like that. They're not trying to make a profit from it. That would be wrong. Right? Or being too brahminical and trying to make money, they won't make it. So they're making money is purely according to Vaishya standards. And their participation in the spiritual program is brahminical. Then that mix doesn't bother them. Does that make sense? So if you understand the basis on which it functions, it doesn't matter what the mix is. This means whatever is prominent, you use that. You're a manager, you use those principles. You're assisting, you use those. It doesn't matter. So that's why the principles are more important than the form. The form is the natural medium to manifest those principles. But if those can't always be appreciated or used, but if the principle is used, applies, it's still varnashram. Right? Some who aren't really informed will claim it's not, because they think a rule is varnashram. But varnashram is actually just the mood of the Lord, what he likes to do. What does he do with his arms?
What is the purpose behind it? It has a common theme. So if that common theme is there, then it works. Right? Just like, you know what I'm saying? Like that. So that's the actual point, is to understand. Then you could say, even simpler than that, there's an underlying current of culture that is to be learned by all of them. Because in the spiritual world, everyone is humble. Everyone is tolerant. Everyone respects everyone else. No one is expecting any respect to be back, given back. And everybody is fully Krishna conscious. Right? Culture in this essence is the third verse of the Sikshastakam. All other rules of culture and interaction are based on these 5 points. Everything. Whatever Manu says, whatever Artha says, Kama, Moksha, Bhakti, it all is based on these. Right? So now, all it is these things are trying to teach you that. In other words, a brahmachari learns humility and patience and respect and not being respected and being Krishna under the teacher by following rules that are there in a very intellectual environment. Right? It's a masculine environment. Gurukul, even if it's a husband and wife running it, it's still the man's field. It is in no way the woman's field. She may assist him, but it's the man's world. So the mood is intellectual. Like that. She can take care, she can give nice things, but it's still the man's world. That's why it's a gurukul. So in that environment, you can see, you can make a mistake, you can try again, because the risk is very low, right? You're dealing with someone who is not trained. They don't know how to interact. And so you have to put them in the lowest risk environment. And it's not the household. Household life is the highest risk environment. You can gain the most in emotion, and you can lose the most. But in intellectual environment that the brahmachari is living in, the gain is the least, but the loss is the least. So that's the best for training, right? You know, you get something and they do some practical work as student, but they're doing it on something that's not going to be a big loss, right? You want them to learn how to buy something. You know, you give them 5 rupees and go say, okay, go buy this. You don't give them, you know, 50 lakhs of rupees and say, okay, now make a contract to build the building. Right? The loss is too great. So they work in that. So in that environment, then the brahmachari learns these things. And then when he's competent in that, he's actually learns humility and tolerance and respect and all that. Then he can work in family life, if he needs. If he still, after gaining those qualities, finds that the emotional needs and desires are deep, where there's a requirement of ownership, then he gets married. Then in that, he has to continue practicing this. In other words, it wasn't necessarily, it was good, but now he has to realize it, because he can't deal with women or children unless he is humble, tolerant, respectful, and not looking for any respect. And if he wants to survive as a devotee and go back to Godhead, he has to connect it to Krishna. So in other words, the teacher was the guru. Now the family is the guru, to learn the same principles. Then as a vanaprastha, his own senses and the material energy itself become the guru. Because then he's just seeing how, means the nature, it's hot outside, I tolerate heat. It's cold, I tolerate that. It's raining, I tolerate that. I'm hungry, I tolerate that. Before he engaged the senses, but he had to engage it with humility and tolerance and that. He in no way could be Lord. A brahmachari couldn't be a Lord. Successful grihastha never thinks he's the Lord. If he does, that's that nanosecond he thinks that, then the kids or the women will, you know, completely obliterate him. Right? Then the nature and the senses, then he's not the Lord, because they're in control. And then having gone through that, he's got the training on the intellectual platform. He's dealt with the emotional platform from the attached and brought it to the detached platform. Now he deals with the material as indifferent. Therefore, he can deal with it or not deal with it, right? Because the brahmachari doesn't deal with it. That way he can function. The Grihastha has to deal with it. He can't not deal with it. And then again, the Vanaprastha is not dealing with it. But the sannyasi, he deals with it or not deals with it. If it's there, they feed him something nice, he eats it. Right? They don't feed him something nice, he eats that. Right? The Grihastha has to eat something good. The Vanaprastha has to eat something not good. The sannyasi, whatever comes. He eats, he doesn't eat. Today, he sent something to eat. He eats, he didn't send, he doesn't eat. Right? The Vanaprastha doesn't eat, the Grihastha has to eat. Right? So, he's learning these four principles of culture by all these different gurus. And only if he's gained these four is he successful. And if you know these four, it doesn't matter who you're with, you'll survive. That's why the devotee can actually make it anywhere. Devotee is, that's the meaning transcendental. Is devotee, despite differences in nature, varna and ashram, and that can still function. Because he's actually working on the principle on which everything else is based. Therefore, there isn't anybody that the devotee can't work with. Like we see, Prabhupada, there was no one that he worked with that didn't think he was a gentleman. But we ourselves, I could work with, I'm comfortable, I'm at ISKCON communication, so I work with the journalists and all those kind of people. But, and another person's, I work with the politicians. And someone else's, I work with the kids off the street. And someone else's, I work with the academics. And they don't necessarily do good across with others. They're very good in their field. But Prabhupada worked with all of them. Because as a devotee, these four are manifest in their perfection, that therefore, it doesn't matter. So, if one knows the science, it can still be operated. It just means you have to work a little harder and be a little more conscious. It doesn't just naturally come. Right? Does that make sense? But if you know the science and through the intelligence by sadhana, then anything can be learned, anything can be gained. The Brahman can learn anything, teach anything. Therefore, a devotee is a Brahman. Therefore, they can technically learn anything. Though naturally they'll be comfortable in their own nature, so they should find, what is that combination? If it is a combination, great, but find it. Work it out. Okay, father, they're from a Kshatriya line, but, couldn't get a, job as in the police or in the military because of some physical ailments, so therefore ended up in the acting business, because Kshatriyas also are very good with the arts. And then marries a lady who their family is doing business and stuff like that, but she's very religious and all that. But as a woman, then likes the arts, and so then they meet, and then they have a kid, and so you got all four varnas there. You preach, you organize a situation. You preach to people who then are able to give money to organize a situation where you can make, let's say, Hollywood Krishna conscious. Does that make sense? So you find it. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah. A balance. Yeah. In other words, yes. You heard it. So he said, and the conclusion is that no matter what you're doing, whatever you're using of that mix, if you're using the rules, specifically the principles and how much of the external rules you can in that situation, it will work. Because the situation is created by God. Right? It means whatever situation is here is a manifestation of the universal form. So it will function according to these. So it's when you're in that, just like Krishna as a charioteer is submissive to Arjuna. Right? The only one time he told him what to do was at the very end. Right? He'd gone the whole battle, the whole 18 days, then when they're finished, and now it's time to dismount from the chariot, on the last day, then that's it. Then Krishna told Arjuna, you get off first. Right? So that's a no-no. The charioteer doesn't tell the warrior to get off the chariot first. He gets off first, holds the horses, makes sure nothing happens. like that, helps them down, helps them up. And he said, wait a minute, I'm the Kshatriya, you're the charioteer, you get down first. And he says, no, I know what I'm talking about, you get down first. Like that. So then, okay, so then Arjuna got down first, because then it's like, okay, he's the Lord, I'm a devotee. So then it switches, you know. He's the Supreme Lord, so that puts him in the Kshatriya place, and I'm the servant, that puts me in the Shudra place, so therefore I get down. He got down, then he moves away from the chariot. As soon as Krishna gets down, the whole thing just bursts into flames. Because he said there was so much ill will from so many persons that was all directed at the chariot that only because Krishna's on it, it didn't burst into flames. But as soon as Arjuna, Krishna had gotten off, Arjuna would have gone up in the flames. So therefore... So you see is that even though Krishna acted the whole time as a Shudra, right? And Arjuna was saying, go here, go there, like that. That was the problem with Shalya and Karna. Because Karna is the only one that's basically equal to Arjuna. And Shalya is the only one that's basically equal to Krishna as a charioteer. So then Duryodhana's like last trump card is Shalya driving the chariot for Karna. But Shalya made the rule is, I'm driving the chariot as a Kshatriya, not as a Shudra. So therefore I'm taking no lip from him, because I know what to do. I drive the chariot where I think it should go, not where he says it should go. Therefore then there was the fight, and Shalya said, if he gives me any lip, I'm out of here. So as soon as Karna made some point about, you know, why don't you behave properly and that, he said, you know, I don't have to take this from you, got up and walked off, right? So then he had to drive the chariot himself, right? Which also worked for him, because technically as a Suta, he's a charioteer, and as having been recognized by Duryodhana, he was the king, so then it worked for him, he could drive his own chariot. But, you know, so there you also had the... you know, proper application of that Varna Shankara mix, you know, so it's, does that make any sense?
Another question. Within this kind of authority structure, Prabhupada emphasized that we follow the directions of our authority.
Yes. Yes. Okay, so now it's like continue with the intelligent questions, but now it's getting to a little, how you say, touchy. saying that in the early days of ISKCON, then we had this... you know, we listen to authority, we're supposed to follow authority, and so the stress in the leadership was to create authority. I mean, we create Brahminical class, as Prabhupada had directed. But now it seems that we're more going to yes men, which seems to be more of a Shudra class. One could take it as yes men, as Shudra. One could take it as just people just worrying more about their own place, not really being leaders. Technically speaking, I would even say as yes men are there, but what I would say is, because that could be just politically correct. More technically, what you could say is Shudra is bureaucracy. Bureaucrats are Shudras. So as we bureaucratize our leadership, basically what we're trying to do is take the leadership or the dvija aspect out of the system and replace it with bureaucrats. But in no functioning live system of the world do the bureaucrats run the show. Any place where they kind of are, it's generally known as a quite hellish situation, like that. Because then all they're doing is going by the rule itself. And the rule was made for a purpose that needs to be interpreted for time, place, and circumstance. That's what a leader does. Bureaucrats can't. So because the bureaucrat wants to be in charge, therefore they don't like leadership, because leadership can operate the bureaucracy better, because they're actually the operators of it. The bureaucrats are the assistants within it, or the tools used. In other words, the administration, the application, the administration on the object of the administration through the activity or the verb, the bureaucracy is an instrument, right? It's not directly doing the activity. So as long as the bureaucracy is taken care of, then they're submissive. They like that. And so being yes men is okay. Better is the leadership takes their advice, because they're so, they work in the field, they know the field. So it's good to take their advice. So rather than there being yes men, it's technically a fault of the leadership, or lack of it, that they don't ask those under them for advice. Of course, they strain that advice and use what they feel is useful. But otherwise, then, if they don't, because it's the shudras that are in the field, right? The Vaishya sits there at his desk and he takes the money. But it's the shudra that's out there throwing the cloth and looking at the expression. Right? The Vaishya may be doing it when it's a small shop, but when it's a big shop, he's got 50 people there. And he sits over the side, so he can basically see what's going on, and things are being sold. So he knows it's going well, but to know what things are going, what colors, what patterns, what textures, you know, that, then he asks the shudras. Okay, stocks, you know, one shudra comes, says stocks out, then he asks, okay, what stock is moving? And they'll say, oh, you know, the astringent flowery designs are what's going, you know. So then, okay, so then that's what they buy. If he just said, no, I want to buy this, that would be stupid, right? Because it's not him buying the sari. Oh, I mean, he does buy the saris as stock, but if he wants to make profit, someone else has to buy them from him. Does that make sense? So what's misunderstood is in the use of the whole thing, because yes, meaning yes men, meaning that you understand the system and you know how it works. But if the system's not understood and you're saying yes and just taking part, then it's okay if you know nothing, but then the responsibility is with the leadership. But if the leadership is also not responsible, they're hiding also behind the bureaucratic edge of authority with no responsibility, right? That's leadership means authority with responsibility. Bureaucracy means means authority with no responsibility, right? Because it's a group, it's a rule, it's nothing to do with me, right? So that then will be weak. So that is not. Prabhupada wanted leaders. Brahmins specifically, because they will train leadership. Brahmins train Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas. They manage shudras, right? But in the training, a Brahmin, a Kshatriya, and a Vaishya have the exact same training, because they all follow Brahminical culture. But the Brahminical culture is not a Kshatriya or Vaishya's occupation. It's his lifestyle, but it's not his occupation. Does that make sense? In other words, his lifestyle is doing puja and yajna and giving, you know, and giving in charity and all these different things. But it's not his occupation. He doesn't do puja and yajna and receive charity. He doesn't teach others. So in other words, the culture is his culture, but that same culture is the occupation of the Brahmins. But the Vaishyas and the Kshatriyas, they basically manage that culture and create the economics for that culture to function. That's their addition to it. But otherwise, the basic training for all three are the same. Like that. And a shudra, if they're a devotee, it's also the same. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Yes, Prabhu? Yes.
Created
Yes. 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 So it means points well taken. Prabhu is making the point that Prabhupada is saying establish Brahmins, but you need Kshatriyas and you need Vaishyas also, because the Kshatriyas will create the political basis. I guess since we just kept going through, anyone who was planning to leave after the class, then now is a good time, because we'll just keep yakking. Kshatriyas will collect the political base, Vaishyas will collect the money, then your projects will grow. That's true. But the point is the project has to have life. We could say some projects are developed, and you would know well. Those projects, big buildings, nice facilities, but sometimes there's more deities in that facility than there are devotees. So, therefore, then that's something more. That's what he's saying, is that the Brahminical culture, your Kshatriyas and Vaishyas have to act on it anyway. Otherwise, they won't actually do well as it. Because if you see, those who are naturally very good in these fields, they actually have a lot of the qualities, the culture, that we would call Brahminical culture. But it's just being applied or interpreted into this practical other way. Another way is, you don't actually get a Kshatriya without being trained by a Brahmin. Yes. Oh, it means that was your point. Okay, that was your point. Okay. That's the point. Yes. Yes. Yeah. You see, you need. Yeah. 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 Yes. 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 So, point was, more was being, the emphasis was is, those Brahmins are supposed to be doing this, creating the Brahmins and Kshatriyas. So that's true. And that has to be done. So that's why means it's like you have to have the Brahmins to do that. Therefore, there must be things in place to create them. But at the same time is you have to do what's practical and deal with what you have to deal with now. So there has to be those with what best they can are taking up and doing those other duties. But the whole idea is one should not get in the way of the other. Generally, what's happening is the Vedic system is very opulent. But if we approach the whole social body with a shortage mentality, we won't get anywhere. So what happens is we can't do Brahminical, that money should go to the Kshatriyas. Can't do that, should go to the Vaishyas. Can't do that because we actually should be outgrowing carrots. Yeah. 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 Yes. Yes. So you need to train. So basically what one needs is to see the importance of the system and then see what it takes to actually create it. Means those who are in the positions now that have to do the work, trained or untrained, then they should try to educate themselves at least kind of what's going on so they know how to do it in the best way possible and take advice from those where they can get good work. And at the same time, see that the system is in place, that it creates the next generations are in a better position to do it more naturally. And then the generation after that is even more. So it should expand. So both have to be dealt with at once. What I was meaning is the tendency, as I've seen, is that something will come up, and if there's any money, generally there's a fight over the money where it should go. rather than, okay, one project is taken care of, great. Because it's like this. I could, let's say I have some money, and one thing is taken care of. Then that means now I have less things to worry about. Now I worry about focusing on getting the money for those others. Now, if it's a matter of, okay, this project, by working at this level, I could take the money and that other money could work to get others with that level, but still it's only, it's not going to be 10, it's only going to be 3. And then those 3 can build up on that. But then at least I've gotten 3 working. But if I say, no, 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 all 10 should get equally, then that means nothing works. So that's what we're talking about in that it has to be balanced. That's what the Varnashram system is, so that the Brahminical culture goes on without being at the expense of the Kshatriyas or Vaishyas, and those two go on without the expense of the Brahminical. Yeah, they should. That's... Yeah. But some projects don't necessarily, it means it will in the long run. It's also production of wealth, one means it's production of opulence. So one has to see what that is. That can be knowledge, it can be influence, meaning political, it can be actual money, it can be kind, it can be manpower, something, but profit has to be there. Opulence should come from, means devotional service, means knowledge and opulence will manifest. That's what's mentioned in the Bhagavatam. So, but one has to have the vision, right? It means your biggest people in these fields of knowledge, power, and wealth are the ones that can see farthest down the road. You know, it's just like someone was telling me that all the big educational institutions of the world only actually, from the day that they start it to the day that it's fully established, is 40 years. And generally it takes 20 years for them to figure out exactly who they are. Right? You know, does that make some sense? So in the same way as if that's seen by leadership, then you know full profit will come after 40 years there. Political, you can get it much quicker. Business, but it's going to take time. Much of the time, businesses don't flourish because the amount of wealth that's taken off the top that they can't invest and therefore prosper. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah, yeah. No, no. What you're saying is fully correct. I think what was the difference in the approach here was you're taking it that Brahminical leadership is in place and why it's not establishing the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas in local community. I was working on the principle is we don't have Brahminical leadership in place. So therefore, that plan has to be made along with it. We have GBCs, but one of the discussions that they always discuss is, are we Brahmins or are we Kshatriyas? To this day, if they... But only a Brahmin can create a Kshatriya. Only a Brahmin can make a Kshatriya. So that's the point, is that if they'll take the Brahminical stand, which they easily could, then they could create everything that you're talking about. Yes, you learn. Of course. Of course. You can kickstart it or you can put it. We're just saying if they have some idea which way to go, or if, means if they see, if it's seen the importance to create it, then one will try. And by practice and using intelligence, you'll be successful. But you have to first see, that's what I was talking about before in the class, is that if you have a field, Sankarshan, but until there's attraction to that field to operate it and get a result, then you will not make the endeavor. Endeavor only comes once there's attraction to doing that. So unless the importance is seen, and therefore the interest to do that, and then the need to do that, it won't happen. You know what I'm saying? Within the... No, what I'm saying here is, catch here. What we're saying is the need means within the heart. We need it, but unless it comes within the mind and heart of the individual, the endeavor is not made. Like, the man is sitting at home. He's sitting in his lounge chair. And he's not doing anything. And his wife is harassing him. Why does he get off his backside and go out and do anything? But the inspiration's not there. Here, let's put it in another way. You already said it. You already said it. You said, why aren't they doing it? So I'm saying is technically, as someone who deals with training, is until it's understood the need for it or the importance of it, someone doesn't look in that direction. You only look at what is going on now. What is the problem today that's giving me problem, and I deal with that. But leadership means... Of course, but... Of course, it's needed. Yes. Yeah, yeah. No, we understand that. Yes. Yes. But since this environment here that we're in right now is an educational environment, therefore we're looking at it from that point, because in this association here, we're not the ones to make the decision. We don't have the authority or that. We can simply discuss the concepts on which it could be moved forward. But a sleeping man is very hard to wake up. I mean, a man pretending to be asleep. We talk to those who are awake, but unfortunately, they happen to be generally in the East Block. And if you go in the East Block, and if you go there, farms and stuff are happening. East Block means Eastern Europe. Yeah. Generally, they're the only ones in America doing things like that. You go to any temple. Yeah. But, yes, we have to do something. But here is our mandate here is discuss the concepts behind it. You know what I'm saying? Individuals, after we can go out of here and whatever is our influence, we can do. But I'm saying we don't, in the Bhagavatam class, have the authority to make decisions who should be what. We can discuss what are the concepts on which those who do have that can and should work. Yeah. Oh, so you're making a plea. Okay, you can talk to me, but then the point is does everybody else want to be part of that conversation? You know, that's the discussion, because we do talk to those who are interested. But the point is if someone's not interested, they don't take it seriously. As it is, Varnashram generally is defined as an economic system, not actually as a social system, not as a system of personal interaction. What I'm saying is my interaction with it, there's only a very few who are. Yes. Therefore, I'll give you a quote from a one person who was back in the 90s very prominent in Varna Ashram and was a leader and very much into it. And a hand was raised. They used to have an afternoon discussion during the festival every day. 300 to 500 devotees would go. And much of the time the discussion was on Varna Ashram. And then one person raised their hand and said, "What do you see in your experience as when we'll be able to establish Varna Ashram?" And that person then became quiet for some time. And then afterwards said, "When the first generation is dead and gone, then we can establish Varna Ashram." In one sense, yes, in another sense, no. Of course. Okay, so here, just like this. Varna Ashram's the culture. Okay, let's turn, since it's based on a culture. Opulence is feminine. If you don't know how to deal with it, you don't get it. We can't deal with our own families, practically. Much of our movement, the families are broken, dysfunctional. How will any opulence come out of that? So, therefore, it goes deeper than just a bigger management. It's the same thing, because the macro and micro go together. We don't know how to deal with our own women, our own children, our own cows. That's a culture. If that's there, you do your best to take care of cows. Cows are happy, they give milk. Cows aren't happy, they don't give milk. But that's because they're not necessarily seen as something that a human being protects. Correct vision. So therefore, yes, but the point is each individual, they start with a family. It's just like this. How much time can you give doing a full-time project if your wife is upset? The point is that the Kshatriya himself has a wife. And I've watched many good Kshatriyas leave full-time service to go out to put their family back together. And since you're talking about Southeast America, I think you know of hundreds of them there. So that's my point. That was my original point. They're strong, but because Brahminical culture wasn't there, they didn't know actually necessarily how to establish it. Yes, but my point is are they being listened to? Are they being listened to? Are they being listened to? So that's the point, is Brahminical culture is there, but what are you supposed to do? The point is just like this. A leader is there, and someone wants to start a business, do something nice for the temple. Okay. And so the administration then tells them, okay, according to Rupa Goswami's rules, you got to give 50%. And so then he says, okay, 50% of profit. But the management, not knowing business and not having Brahminical guidance to tell them actually what is the rules on it, they want 50% of the gross. And that's what's going on in all our temples, and that's why no temples have temple businesses. So therefore, unless the Brahmin tells the person, this is what is your limit, you can't ask beyond this, because he's a Vaishya, he makes the money. You can take tax, but this is all the tax you get. The maximum you can take is 25%. That's max, that's what the Shastra says. You can't take beyond that. You take beyond that, you're irreligious. So you're neither acting as a Kshatriya or as a Vaishya. You're acting as a dacoit, a thief. So where is that? That's what I'm saying. Unless you have that class of man telling, how are they going to know that that's their limit? So we tell people, but I'm telling you, not very many people like to listen. Because the Brahmins advise. Here I'll show another thing, a dynamic between the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas. The Brahmins advise, but that's where it stops. That's why a Brahmin has to be humble and simple. Because just because he said it, doesn't actually mean the Kshatriya has to do it. The Kshatriya, because what the Kshatriya does, he's responsible for. Therefore, a properly trained Kshatriya has grown up in that culture, knows the Shastras, and knows that the Brahmin is telling him the correct thing. Because the Kshatriya tends to sometimes not see the forest for the trees. Just because they get so much into something, they need the Brahmins to give them that bigger vision. But what they're telling him is what he knows. Right? Yes. But the point is that advice has to be given from the standpoint that, I'm talking the culture here, that if they don't listen, that's where it ends. It does. So what I'm saying is, we say what we can, and people follow it, nice. If they don't follow it, you can't do anything more than that, because they're the ones taking the responsibility. If the Brahmin decides, like you see, they kick people out, they take the responsibility, then that's another thing. Like you see, Drona, he took the responsibility. He was a Brahmin, but he took the responsibility of the army. So he's functioning as a Kshatriya, but then he's a Kshatriya. He's not a Brahmin anymore. Then Drona needs to listen to Kripacharya. Right? Kripacharya is a Brahmin, you know, in Duryodhana's court. So is Drona. So they simply give advice. But as soon as Drona actually became commander-in-chief of the army, he's dealt with as a Kshatriya, because he's actually doing Kshatriya duties. They offer him respect as a Brahmin, but technically you can fight with him and kill him, which you can't do to a Brahmin. So now, because he's functioning in that way, he might get overwhelmed by, you know, on the ground, you know, military command, that he'll have to listen to Kripacharya, who technically, as a Brahmin, is junior to him, about what he's doing. Yeah, he's like that, yeah. So then, what we're saying is, it has the limit. Is what I was meaning before. When I'm talking in this, I'm talking about it running very smoothly. With the culture, the attitude, all that. That's what we're talking is very futuristic. The mechanics of it now, if people are just smart, those who actually understand, could make it happen today. Right? It's not rocket science. People who know administration already know how to do it. Those who know how to make money already know how to do it. Right? So it's just a matter of getting those people in the positions that they're doing it. That's the point. It has nothing to do with, is he a Prabhupada disciple, or is he senior, or he's older than me, or he's married, and it's a matter of who knows how to do it. Guna and karma, that's Varnashram. So you might have a temple president who's the junior most person in the community, but he's a very good manager. Knows how to deal with people, can understand. He should be, not that, oh, well, there he's the Prabhupada disciple, and, you know, he was temple president, you know, in the last, you know, Kali Yuga before, you know, he blooped, you know, and stuff like that. You know, it's like, I've seen it, temples where I've talked to the management, and they say it's so hard to function, because I have here 27 ex-temple presidents that want to come in and tell me what to do and think that I have to follow. So that means they're not acting as Brahmins. They could come and say, hey, you know, I've been in where you're at right now, and I did this and this happened and that went wrong, but I did this and that worked, so think about it, and then walk away. But no, I said it, you got to do it. So they're acting as Kshatriyas, not Brahmins. So therefore, the Brahmins aren't acting as Brahmins, the Kshatriyas aren't acting as Kshatriyas, Vaishyas aren't acting as Vaishyas. Vaishyas also, they got money. Okay, I tried to do the thing. Then the temple management doesn't actually understand business. So therefore, they expect a ridiculous amount of tax from me. You know, and all saying, oh, it's all for Krishna. You know, very nice, but somehow or another, Krishna has a different plan. You know, Krishna designed business, not uninformed temple presidents. So therefore, I want to do this project. I'm, you know, a devotee of Prabhupada. I want to do something for Prabhupada. Therefore, I will manage my own project. And so then they try to take up those positions. It may work to some degree as far as getting the money, getting everything in place. They set a fabulous form. Like you generally see Vaishya temple presidents, make a fabulous temple as far as facilities, money, everything. But sometimes their people skills outside of economics aren't very strong. Situating people according to their actual need. You know, let's say the person's a pot washer, then he's a pot washer. You know, so unless you can figure out how pot washing is part of making money, if you take him off pot washing and put him in something else that actually makes money, but then he can't do it for long, he disappears. So generally you'll find those temples tend to be a bit empty. Great facility, clean, nice, but no people, no inspiration, like that. The Kshatriyas, then they'll do a nice job, it'll have to be really organized, that generally you'll have good money, like that, but it's sometimes too rigid. Brahmins many times run them, but unless they're a good manager, then the atmosphere in the temple is fabulous. Everybody loves it there, but they don't have any money, and so eventually it falls apart. And then they bring in some manager, but then they completely lose the atmosphere. So when the culture is understood of who does what, that simple thing, you already have tons of qualified people who could do anything. I mean, the power of devotional service, you had a handful of hippies who basically didn't have any skill to do anything. And they used to sit around and listen to the Beatles. The farthest thing from their mind would be, I'd be living in the Beatles' house and training them in God consciousness. But they went to England, and after 3 months, they're living in their house. So where does that come from? Yeah, comes from Prabhupada, comes from devotional service. So therefore, it's not even as much the skill. As you mentioned before, you go out, you do it. It means if you have that nature, by doing it, you will figure it out. It's just like this. You have a business person. If they learn from their father, great. They make less mistakes, profits come in earlier. You don't, they will figure it out. You know, there are guys that have had businesses go bankrupt 4 or 5 times, and then finally they make it. They're in their 40s, but they're billionaires. So they will figure it out. A Vaishya will figure it out. A Kshatriya will figure it out. Brahmin will figure it out. But if the culture is not understood, then no one will actually act within that and actually stick to that. You know, I saw one devotee. This devotee, by looking at a cow, can tell, a pregnant cow, can tell if it's going to be a male or female. He can just look at it and tell you. He can take that cow and groom it and go down to the local Karmi, you know, fair and get prizes for his cow. You know, I mean, probably one of the most qualified cow persons in our movement. You know, no talk. And not only that, he can go out there and grow potatoes with the best of them. He just knows how to do it. But because he's just seen no one cares for the cows, no one cares for the agriculture, no one, and business is always messed around. If in your temple, you got to do it on your own. Therefore, he's decided he's going to be a manager. And ooh, what hellish situation was created. And then at one point they decided they were going to be, you know, a big educator. And then eventually they just ended up looping. And because he was good at agriculture, he went back to, got a job as a horticulturalist. You know, it's easy, you deal with plants, and he's fabulous. So if he just know, this is what he sticks to, and the others would know how to deal with them. We have stuff, resources in our movement are beyond expectation. You know, it's like we're not dealing with a handful of hippies anymore, right? You know, because most of those hippies came from professional backgrounds anyway. You know, they've all gone back to Wall Street and this and that. And even if they haven't, just, you know, the power of devotional service. So it's means the drive is there. In other words, that fire that you have, that's good. But what we're saying is you refine it in that the culture that's necessary to do those things, if that's understood, then it will happen so smoothly. I've watched one yatra. All they do is preach to professionals. Well, actually speak of two yatras, but I was thinking of one. And they're the smaller of two temples. Well, it's the same in this other place also. So then, wow. Okay, so then they go to organize a festival. They decide they're going to take a park and they're going to do a festival in this park. They spend months and months and months. I'm talking about bank managers, you know, teachers, business persons. I'm not talking about kids. You know, I'm talking about, you know, in the 20s, 30s, dynamic, you know, like yuppies. All devotees. They plan a festival for months. They know what each one's strength and weakness is in. They get together. They do a fabulous festival. But the local temple doesn't like because it's not under them. They're just they're a community center. But they do bigger things than the temple does. And in the temple, generally you get one person who wants to run everything. And then it doesn't work. But we see is that when Maharaj Yudhishthir did the Rajasuya sacrifice, he's an emperor. Bhishma could be an emperor. Arjuna could be an emperor. Nakula Sahadev can be an emperor. Krishna's king of the world. Right? But they each take one thing. Bhima's outstanding as a cook. So therefore he only takes care of the food. For thousands and thousands of kshatriyas. You know, you're cooking for hundreds and thousands, probably millions of people. He's arranging. He only does that. He could oversee, but he only does that. Krishna only takes care of the shoes. Can you imagine thousands of kshatriyas and one guy gets his shoes mixed up? You got trouble. You got a war. So all he does is take care of the shoes. Nothing else. You could say, oh, how demeaning. He only takes care of the shoes. He could do more than that. No, the man is just shoes is big. Right? Nakula and Sahadev, one would greet the persons, the other one would sit them down. You don't know who they are and their status, and you say something too small, you got a war. You say something too big, then others will criticize, you know, then they'll look down on you. And others will say, what, he doesn't know the culture? And the other one has to be able to sit them accordingly, you know. You don't want to sit enemies next to each other. You don't want to, you know, so the status, who's who. So you got to know the whole planet and know who's allies with who and to what degree today, because it changes day by day. It means all your spies are out there. All you do is that. You know, so that's all they do is one thing. So that's management. These are the cultural things to learn, these little things of how much is there. They're small points, but they make such a difference. And if that's understood, then with that little bit of training, that's there. And the reason it was said that only when the first generation goes was because in their experience, the first generation didn't want to learn those little things that would make it work. It's just like you have this big car and everything, but you have a little key, little dinky key. You know, you think, what do I need this key for? No, but the key is what makes it work. You're going to drive it, you're going to do it. Unless you put in the key, it just doesn't function. So these little social interactions that one understands where one's authority stops and the other's begins, and therefore what your interaction or the etiquette is between the two of you, if that's known, as far as what to do in these three fields, we have experts. We have tons of them. Like that. That's not the problem. It's actually knowing where the line is between them and how much you do and where it is and stop there. You know? And then that's it. You know, you don't go beyond that. You sit, you take part, that way you learn. You know? And it's like that. You know, like that one devotee, he's the bank manager, therefore he figures out all the finances. You know, and someone else is a, you know, how you say, graphic designer. So they work out the advertisement and all those things. And they work together because it works nicely. And because all it is they're just trying to do some preaching and all that. And they're not trying to make a personal profit off of it. They got money. So it works. So the fire is good. But the point is direct the fire exactly where it will do something. You know? In other words, training means first I know who I am, right? That's where we start. Atma, what is it? self-realization, right? So Atma also includes the body, the mind, the intelligence, right? So that makes up your conditioned nature. So what actually you're comfortable with and qualified with in material interaction. And then, of course, the spiritual and seeing that. All devotees have that one down very, very well. That one's established nice. So I know who I am. This is what I can do. You know, I'm a business person. I'm good at middle business that I only have a few assistants. That I go bigger than that, it falls apart. I go smaller than that, I'm frustrated. So I know, okay, therefore, if someone's got a, I want to be, you know, I can do something, or I can be part of a bigger plan and work under bigger vaishyas who I can assist, and we can, you know, therefore do something. But I know that. I'm not going to try to be the big guy, and I would be frustrated just coming in as a lone guy. So I'm going to come in with my small crew. So I know who I am. Then I know who others are, because I am one out of eight of the Varna and Ashram. You know, I fit in there. And then within each one, there's some, how you say, degrees, some vary. I sell pawn on the corner, or I'm a multinational billionaire. You know, it's the same principles, but it's just how much risk I can take. Does this make some sense? Did I lose you here? Did we lose you here? No, there's too much resistance. That's my. No, okay. Okay, so here's like this. Let us put it this way. Let us get down to brass tacks. I'm a Brahmin. I run a school. I teach people how to do this. That's all I can do. People want to listen, they do. More than that, that's what I can't do. Beyond that, you got to go talk to a Kshatriya to go out there and kick some backsides. I'm not the man. So what I'm telling you is, what is the practical plan that I'm doing now? I have students who are GBC, who go into the meeting, sit there one time, and go, there's one-third dead weight here. The first time they walk into a meeting. And on their own, they're running yatras. I have them. So that's why we're... yes, but that's another point. My point is this person... Yes, but that's their business to change it. We can only create. So what I'm working at is, I will train, and if somebody from now takes it, great. But I'm seeing is the second and third generation are happy to take it up and happy to go do it. And when they do it, it works. I haven't seen any of our boys out there managing that aren't successful, that aren't appreciated, that aren't getting results. Generally, they're afraid of the place. Like that. But there's only so many of them. But the point is what I'm explaining is, what is the practical system, how you get to the point that you want. My point is that leader, unless he knows who he is and knows who other people is, can't guide anyone. Unless you know who you are, how can you tell someone else who they are? So that was my point, is if it's very clear that this is what we do, it works. If the GBC knows, I'm here to see that the standards are going on, not to manage it, that's what I have a temple president for, then I am not the manager. I simply come in and say, are your spiritual standards on? Is everyone chanting? Are they distributing books? Is the cleanliness there? Is the deity worship standards up to what Prabhupada gave? Is the Vaishnava etiquette amongst devotees going on properly? Are we cultivating the community? Are we inspiring the devotees? Then you have so much. All the other nitty-gritty, let the temple president. What do I care? No, that's not going on. That's not going on. That's going on, but my point is that kind of association from the top going on? Most of them are managers. If you're in a GBC meeting, it's all management. No, you're not catching the point. It's like, I'll give you another point. In Vrindavan, Prabhupada wanted Guru Kripa to sit down there. Guru Kripa thought, I could be out doing so many things. And what am I going to do there? Prabhupada said, just by your being there, everything will go nicely. So in other words, if there's senior association that is there inspiring you to do your service, rather than you're the one that when they can't, they come to you to do their service, right? Temple president runs into a problem, he goes to the GBC to solve it. That means he's made the GBC a manager, rather than getting the inspiration how he's going to solve it himself or amongst the other temple presidents, right? Before, temple presidents used to work together, right? Rather than just we got our temple and we work separately than the other temple. So, yeah, so that's... Yeah. Yeah. Because it's management. If it's not management, you probably find people would sit. Because otherwise what's happened, somehow or other, GBCs become managers as opposed to... Of course. But so that's my point, is you have to create that understanding then, because there are lots of people there in these communities that could be inspiring. You know? But I know for many temple presidents, the senior men in the community are a nightmare because they don't know where the end of their authority is and the beginning of the temple presidents is. And so they don't like to take advice or cultivate them or bring them in because immediately they take over. Well, the point is unless you know what the reason is, then how are you going to solve it? Until you know what the problem is, how are you going to solve it? Okay, but the point is we say solution, but we have to know what we're doing. Just like we say, business is failing, what are we going to do about it? Okay, business is failing because we're buying things more expensive than we're selling them at. Yes, but I want a solution. Yes, of course. Yes. Yes. Yeah. I haven't talked one bit of vision. I've talked practical, what I do day to day and make it happen. Not practical information. This is a mistake on your part. What you call theory is the practical, bottom working, direct work of a Brahmin. You take what I say and use it, it works. That's the point. You're making a mistake thinking Brahminical means theory here. Theory is what they do. It is their occupation. You follow this. It works. What I've said is what I can do, because you were mentioning about myself, is I can run a school where those who are interested come and I train them in this. And I go out to different yatras that are actually interested, and as much as I can give advice, I do. But it's up to them to apply it. But otherwise, I was giving this information so that yourself or anyone else could do the same thing in their own community. Because I'm working here. I can't work everywhere. Like you said, you need someone to sit down. I'm sitting down here. So this is what I do here. It's going on. So what I'm saying is, these are the practical, this is the actual methods on how you get someone else. I was just teaching you how you get a GBC to understand who they are, or a temple president, or the senior community man, or it means until they know that, how will they work together? They come together in a meeting. You have the temple community board. No one knows actually who they are, so they can't work. They have a meeting. And at best it's pleasant, they take a little prasad and go away, nothing happens. Or it turns into a riot. Or the temple president kicks them all out, never sees them again, and just does what he wants to do. So if they're very clear who they are, then, and where, what they can do and what their limits are, then immediately it starts to work. It works like that. It's immediate. It's just like if you go home and talk properly to your wife, you get immediate result. You know, if you've been ignoring her or been insensitive or in some way upset her and you've had an attitude, if you just go humble and go and say, I'm sorry, even though you may see it's logically your fault, I mean her fault, but emotionally it's not, it's your fault, right? She did something wrong, you reacted emotionally wrong, therefore she's upset. You're looking at it that she's wrong because what she did was wrong, she's looking at you're wrong because you didn't deal properly. You go home, you're humble, and say, I'm sorry, I won't do it again. And however much pain they got from it, that much they're going to bang you over the head, and you take it, your problem's over. And you have a nice, happy, smiling woman that interacts with you in all the ways that you have always wished she would. It's that simple, and it happens on the spot. But if you don't know the science or how to the art of application, it doesn't happen. Therefore, what I'm saying is not theory. It works. Like that. The point is just like you said, it's harder to manage a family than the world. So therefore, what I just said there, if it work in your family, then that means what I just said will work for your yatra. That's my point. Okay? Like that. So keep up that fire, just... it needs to be directed, and then you'll get a result. That's what I'm saying. So that's what we need. We need that. We need devotees that have that vision and fire. This fire is action, so it's necessary. But you just don't want to get burnt. That's the point. That's the point. You don't want to get burnt. You don't want to get cut. Right? You know, that's a, like that. So thank you for having this determination. That's good. Okay. What time is it? Where did my watch go? Oh, it's already 10:30. Okay, any other questions on this? Or otherwise we'll end because it's kind of late. No? Okay. Is it on this point? No, see, kshatriyas are intelligence, it's passion and goodness. So it has to be logical, it has to be according to Shastra, but it has to work. Does that make sense? You can discuss with Brahmins theoretical, but the kshatriyas, it has to work. They won't take only a theory. It has to be a theory, but it has to work. Vaishya, they're only interested that it works, like that. Theory or no theory, they're not so worried. As long as it works, because if it works, it means it's according to theory. But it's not so interesting to them. But a kshatriya, the theory is also important to them because the amount of the picture that they're looking at, they have to know that everything fits into place, you know, very organized. Does that make sense? So it's just a different way of training. It means, in other words, there's technically not much difference between a Brahmin and a kshatriya. Kshatriya is the one who does it. Right? Means social reform and all that. The Brahmin is the one who directs it. He gives the knowledge and all that, but he himself doesn't manage the kingdom. So technically speaking, a kshatriya is a Brahmin who has the inclination to manage on that level. That's why Karna wouldn't kill Yudhishthir, because he thought he was a Brahmin. He was too sattvic. You know? No. Here's a chair here if you want. There's... Oh, okay. You know? Does that make sense? So that's a Rajarshi. He's basically a Brahmin who manages. So the difference between a Brahmin and a Kshatriya is very, very close. The big gap is actually between the Kshatriya and the Vaishya. Because Vaishya, if it's according to Shastra, nice. It's pious, it will give a better return. But if it's not, it doesn't matter as long as it works. That's all. Right? So this modern pragmatism comes out of the bourgeois culture, which is a Vaishya culture. Right? Like that. So, but Kshatriya means it's got to work, but according to a practical theory. So, if they think the theory is not practical, they won't like it. Right? They'll only theorize if they think the theory is going to work. So you have to convince them of that. Right? And that also means then the Brahmins, the Deva Kshatriyas have to handle a little bit of chivalry. Because if they find a fault, seeming fault, then they'll always bring it up as a fault to the Brahmin. So it's an argument, it's a fight of words. Because that gives pleasure to the Kshatriyas. So those Brahmins who can handle that, do that. Those who can't, don't. Like that. So it's a fine point. But the culture for the Brahmin, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas is exactly the same. The training's the same, because technically they're dwijas, they're the same entity. Just within that culture, one trains and advises, one leads, and one creates the economy. Because you need all three. Right? Without direction, you don't know what to do. Without leadership and protection, nothing's going to happen. And without money, nothing runs. So you have to have all three. So they're three parts of the same entity. That's why there's dwijas, then there's shudras. So the actual training for all three is the same. Does that make sense? But within it, there are fine points. How you'll get the same point across is different. For the Vaishya, it'll be what's the profit. For the Kshatriya, it'll be what's the, you know, that the proper religious function and niti and all that's in place. For the Brahmin, that is shastric and it's correct. Right? Does that make sense? That's how you'll actually train the different three. When you talk to them, that's how you'll talk. That. So even though you're making the same point, you use a different vocabulary in a different presentation. Then they're inspired, then they work. Is that okay? Yeah? Okay, so I think we'll end here. Otherwise it's getting quite long, which I hope. Grantaraj Shivad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jainatai Gaura Premanandi.